Okay. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of Politically Non-Binary, my podcast with it, where the host, me, Ariel Isaac Norman, is not, I'm just not really, I don't fall neatly into the political binary. I mean, but honestly, much like with my gender, I think I'm a little autistic and I just don't really fall into categories. I feel like an asshole is like, neither do y'all, except y'all are kind of, a lot of y'all are boys or girls, and a lot of y'all are pretty much liberal or conservative or something, libertarian or whatever. And I just, there's probably just something wrong with me where I just see everyone's point. So you might hear me talking to someone in this podcast, you know, some episode, you might be going like, damn, I didn't know Ariel was a libertarian. Or, damn, I didn't know Ariel was a conservative cuck. Or, whoa, whoops, I guess Ariel is a liberal faggot. Except she does say faggot. So how much of a liberal faggot can I really be, you know? That's all it takes to prove that you're not a liberal faggot. Just say it out loud. Anyway, but, you know, you might, depending on what episode you listen to, you might think I'm one way. But I really, I tend to, whoever I'm talking to, agree with them. And I don't do it like that's not a strategy. That's just how I am. I always have questions. I have questions for everyone, too. That's the other thing. It's like, I don't blindly follow any particular thing and just, like, have the confirmation bias everywhere there. And I don't mean to sound, am I bragging? I know, life would probably be simpler if I could just fucking pick a lane about anything in life. Politics, gender, my career, relationships. Yeah. Anyway, I've been going through some really hard times, so I'm just going to put that out there. Sorry, this podcast comes out when it comes out, and I am getting my life in shape. I think I've been saying that for a long time, but plans are in place for me to really make some changes in my life that will hopefully make me a more productive, or allow me to be a more productive member of society, including putting this podcast out regularly and making it better and better. For now, though, I did record an episode with a comedian, Rose Vineshank, that I met last time I was in New York. She and I were on a show together and just hit it off. She lives in Baltimore, and I've never really, like, talked to anyone from Baltimore before, so. Lesbian from Baltimore, she is tired of the queers who are obnoxious, you know, it's that sort of thing. So, if you like that kind of content, her suggestion was along the lines of, like, stop being a bunch of faggots, you queers. And there's a lot of that sentiment, and that has been building for a while, so we'll have a nice little episode of that. Hope you enjoy it. I'll come back at the end to talk about feedback and stuff. All right. How's your day been?
It's been kind of lame. I'm finishing up like my job. I got a new job, so I'm kind of tying up loose ends here. It's been pretty boring.
Yeah, the old waiting for the old job to end thing.
I know. I feel like I got senioritis. Like, it's back in high school, and it's like that last week where you're like, oh my God, I can't find any motivation.
You would think it would be freeing to be at the end of something and like that would be enjoyable in some way, you know, and you could soak up the parts that you like, but it just doesn't seem to work that way.
Well, yeah. I mean, I feel like the assumption there is that there are parts that you like.
Oh, yeah.
How about you? How's your day going?
Good. I have a 2-hour block at the gym that I do sometimes where I do like a strength and conditioning class, which was brutal today, and then kickboxing, Muay Thai, which was also, it's always brutal. So
is all you do workout like during the days? You just like build your strength and then channel it into your stand up muscle routine at night?
I'm basically Joe Rogan Jr.
Cool.
Sometimes I do a 1-hour workout, but I try to do a 2-hour workout because then it makes me feel like I've definitely done enough for the day and I can kind of eat whatever I want, which is important to me. So
don't become too powerful.
I'm still so small. I mean, I like to think, but like, look,
that's good. That's a bump.
Yeah. There's a little something.
Some it's bumpage.
More, I got definition for sure, but
yeah,
you know, pretty good. Lanky. Yeah. And then, you know, I try to get internet work done and all the stuff, all the people you got to respond to, all the posts, all the email, the clubs, whatever, you know, but stuff. I hate all of the work, anything that is like on the computer or the computer phone. It's just miserable. So I just do it in small chunks.
Did you say computer phone?
Yeah, that's what I call that's what I call my phone. It's a computer phone.
Oh, yeah. And you know, the telegram can be pretty stressful too.
Well, I mean, I guess you could call it a smartphone, but it is a computer phone. That's what it is.
Yeah. So, I don't know. That's good that like you're getting like, what is it? Traction on there, at least. Better to have a phone blowing up than not at all, right?
Yeah, I guess so. It'll be interesting because it's like sometimes I feel like I'm being productive and I'm like, am I being productive or did I just respond to a bunch of strangers and be like, thanks?
You know? No, that is productive because that's how you get them. They're like, now yeah. They've formed a parasocial relationship with you.
Sometimes I try to put them in a spreadsheet to tell them about future shows or like today I was like, because they're all complimenting me on doing Louis C.K. was here in Austin for the last two nights. And so I got three shows opening for him, featuring for him. And so people were just being like, hey, great job. You killed it, whatever. And I'm just like, hey, come to my backyard sled show tomorrow night. Well, you know,
backyard slugs,
sluts, backyard sluts.
Oh,
yeah.
That's cool either way, though.
Yeah. Backyard slugs. Maybe that'll be a special edition. Maybe that'll be one of the, cause we do like a sexy game in the middle of the standups. So maybe we'll do a backyard slugs game where we make people eat slugs.
Or sexually. just like race without using their arms or legs.
Yeah. But that has to be sexy. So
that is sexy.
Yeah, I guess so. You just have to wriggle on the ground from one place to another. Yeah. We'll make them do something with their tongues on either end of it though. Then that'll be.
Been on either end of it.
One time we made people pass gravy from one person's mouth to the next to a bowl. And like that would be fine if it had been brown gravy warmed up. But instead, so I had to just like get whatever I could at the store. Instead, it was white. It was cold white gravy with sausage chunks.
You had to get the chunky, like you... Just you're like extra pulp, please, oh, for God. This activity.
Full pulp. And my co-host and I made ourselves do it first, and it was absolutely disgusting. Of the three people who like teams who did it, there was the two girls. One of them threw up a little bit.
So, I would have. That would have been me.
Yeah, it was gross.
Did anyone get like too into it?
No, it was just hilarious and gross for everyone. I mean, it was so funny that it was worth it, though. Even the girls, even the one who threw up was still like, thought it was hilarious. So consider that.
It's like, ha ha, like laughing between pukes.
Yeah. I think she just kind of like gagged a little bit more, like just kind of a little bit acid reflux type thing.
A little of it got mixed in there while y'all were snowballing.
How could you even tell if you're throwing up versus just spitting that stuff out of your mouth?
Right. That's how you get more and more each time.
Yeah. She filled her bowl up fastest because she contributed some of her own. She's actually cheating. And got disqualified.
BYOG.
Yeah.
You said what?
She's actually cheating and got disqualified for filling up the bowl with her own vomit instead of just strictly.
You call that juicing.
Yeah. She was reverse juicing. Well, do you want to introduce yourself for the audience? However you want to.
Yeah. My name is Rose Vineshank. I'm a stand-up comic from Baltimore, but I also work in the mental health field during the day and I'm gay, but I'm like also like, what's it called? Jaded. And I have a lot of thoughts about a lot of stuff.
All right. So yeah, you get to come on this podcast and argue something societally, whatever you believe in, some kind of change. So what is the change you believe in?
So I've been noticing this trend for a while in the LGBT community, where I think lately, more so than any other time in history, I think we've been drawing a very specific type of personality to our circles. And I think that it's kind of creating like a less chill and less based environment that frankly just isn't fun or funny. So are you familiar? You've heard of the term like tender queer, right?
I've heard of tender queer. Does that just mean, I forget, does it just mean like kind of like sensitive queers?
It's like, it's this kind of phenomenon where it's like people who are like very, very sensitive, people who are really, really wanting to like make themselves kind of both the martyr of whatever LGBT cause they're fighting for, but also the victim, but also the sexy. They kind of are sucking up a lot of air, taking up a lot of space, and will kind of pay a lot of lip service to being so good and so politically pure and just the perfect queer you can be, the perfect activist, but then sort of treat people interpersonally in their own circles like aberrantly, just terribly.
Yeah, I've definitely encountered that, sure.
And they'll kind of dress it in like very, very, very soft language. Like they'll try and get someone, I don't want to use the word canceled, but like, you know, they'll really like come for someone who might not seem as ideologically pure as themselves.
Right.
And then say something like, I'm just trying my best.
Right. So it's kind of like the worst. It's the worst excesses of the social justice warrior queer who is utilizing the elevated status of being a marginalized class to really wind up becoming a bully to anyone who isn't ideologically pure. Yeah. I mean, I've definitely seen that. I feel like I started noticing that creep up starting in maybe 2017, but in 2020 is when it really took off. I mean, even in 2012, some of it started creeping in. When I lived in Boston, there was some,
it definitely
amount of that. Yeah.
I noticed it around like the same time, like 2016. Cause I noticed that I started getting yelled at a lot. Not for anything, even by like today's standards, that would be even spicy. Just, I would say something like, hey, I'm a lesbian and I love working out. And someone would be like, flaunt your ableism more. And like, I don't know, it would just be a lot of that. And I was kind of curious about the change in vibe and kind of the motivation behind it.
It seems kind of like straightforward in the 2016, 2017 timeline that, and I remember this pretty clear, where once Trump got elected, there was a lot of talk of, well, we need to circle the wagons and like, you know, not question liberal stuff, but only be anti anything conservative, only, you know, kind of follow the righteous path of woke, you know, queerness. And so, yeah. And it's like, and it does feel a little bit like in the last year or so since Biden was elected and people are kind of, you know, chilling out a little bit. There's some amount.
I've seen some chillage too.
Some chillage. Yeah.
But it's almost, I mean, it's almost, the chillage is almost like happening because like everyone is tired.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't know if people would be chilling whether or not like Biden was elected. I think people are just sick of their own bullshit at this point.
Yeah.
And because, you know, there's so much hypocrisy at play. What I kind of noticed also was around that time, there was a new subtype of narcissist added to the DSM, because that's my that's like my field, I guess, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
and it's something called a communal narcissist.
Okay, what's that?
So think about, like, what do you think of when you think of, like, a classic, like, narcissist?
Okay, now I know, like, the colloquial definition is somewhat different than the clinical one. A narcissist, I think colloquially, we just mean someone who's, like, full of themselves, who just only cares about their own selfish interests and will, like, manipulate others to have their way, stuff like that. But I can't remember exactly what the DSM narcissist thing goes for, because I know it's kind of more specific than that. Can you remind us what a narcissist is officially?
I mean, that's pretty much, like, more or less it, though. But a lot of the times when we think of a narcissist, we're thinking of something called a grandiose narcissist, which is, like, the Donald Trumps, the really insane, like, business guys who will be like, you think that you can take a share of my company? I'll stab you. You know what I mean? Like, the ones who are really showing off the wealth, their cars and all of that stuff.
Cutthroat with no real need to, like, give back in very meaningful ways. They might do it if it flatters them, but not a lot of, like, real empathy for others.
No, there's just, like, a kind of noted, like, lack of empathy for other people. So we're very much, like, used to that one presentation of it because it kind of lends itself to not having empathy. You're showing off your riches while other people are suffering. You're doing everything you can to acquire capital in the most traditional way possible, which is money, finances, and all that. But the newer subtype that they've kind of added and been, like, kind of highlighting more is something called a communal narcissist, which is interesting because it's a person who is a narcissist, has that classic, like, lack of empathy, will very, 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 like, fragile sense of ego. But what the difference is, the capital that they're seeking to kind of get their hands on isn't the traditional kind. It's not like money and riches. They want to be the face of social justice movements. They want to be the one who, you know, is the one who's associated with, like, do-gooder, moral purity. And you'll often, like, kind of see them in a lot of, like, activist circles, doing, like, what on the surface looks like good work, right? They always have, like, very progressive politics. But if you look a little bit beneath the surface, the motivation behind that is this very ego-driven need to be kind of centered in things. And I guess, you know, it gets kind of scary in a way when, if you are someone else who's on the periphery who tries to maybe do your own thing, do your own community service, or even do something to disrupt that image, they'll go after you with, again, the same, like, fury as that kind of evil business guy.
Yeah.
All with a pronounced lack of empathy.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't realize that was happening in the DSM, this kind of addition of that kind of person. So they're basically going after the social justice warriors in the DSM. Who knows?
I mean, there's something to be said for it because I don't know, like, I haven't
social
been
justice
able to,
narcissists.
Like, breathe.
Like, social justice narcissists.
Pretty much.
But you haven't been able to breathe?
It's often like, oh, I'm just saying, like, I've just noticed, like, I haven't really been able to kind of, like, breathe in a queer space in a long time. Like, feel like people are looking at me in, like, good faith. There does seem to be this kind of animosity that's kind of just underlying. They're very judgy spaces, and there is that kind of hierarchy of moral purity almost, and it's just become really unappealing to me. And I guess my argument is, I think we need to kind of become self-aware, check ourselves on that, and just calm the fuck down, because I think people will get so like disenfranchised with that, they won't really have any other space to turn.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't want to deal with all that toxicity and you're like a young gay person.
Yeah, where are you supposed to go anymore?
That game. Right. Where do you go? Yeah. And then
it feels like go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I think even people are having such a like reactionary response to that, because there is some truth behind the fact that it is toxic. And I think they're kind of horseshoeing towards the only side that is even daring to speak on that and check the left on that, which is the alt-right.
Right.
Right spaces.
We need more on the left. We need to be a little bit more critical of those kinds of things, and then have spaces that are kind of like actual safe spaces where it's not what we're calling a safe space, but it's actually a place where you're going to get called out and judged on every little word or phrase you say. Like you said, like, it's like, if you're excited about working out, that's just a healthy and good thing. And like, people with disabilities can work out too. I mean, yeah, there are some people who are quadriplegics, like, but most of the time someone can find ways to work out and be physically fit and healthy, and like, and people with different ability type situations also can work out on Instagram and get a good following, because people are like, rah, 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 that's so cool that you're doing that. Like, so it feels like there are some people who are just constantly searching for something to call someone out on. And that's the stuff that feels crazy, especially on Twitter or whatever. It's like, they're just scanning for a problem. How can they make a problem so that they can be the one to call someone out, so that they can have the retweet that goes viral or whatever it is. Yeah.
Well, it's because that's how, you know, that's how even like people, because in a lot of those circles, they're very leftist, they're very anti-capitalist, but that sort of clout is capital.
Right.
So it's that classic narcissist pattern of cutting others down to acquire capital. It's just kind of in a different format that we're not used to seeing.
That's so interesting. Yeah. I like that framing, where these people who say they're so anti-capitalist, but they are going for the social capital of that comes from call out culture. Yeah. Wow.
Definitely.
Well, I'd like to think that then we're in late stage capitalism of that too. Maybe we can.
You think there's going to be like a social capital revolution?
Yeah. That's what we want anyway, where it's like not so much people vying because of their demographic breakdown for whose voice is elevated, right? It shouldn't be who has the most money. It shouldn't be who has the most, you know, disenfranchised boxes that they can check. It should be like, let's listen to everybody's ideas and see who has the most moral clarity. And that should be what we're listening to, and not based on, you know, some intersectional math.
There's no like formula to decide like
what's right and wrong that way. Yeah. Like who to listen to, or who should be leading organizations or whatnot. Like, you can definitely have some amount of, you know, making sure that there's diversity in your companies and your boards and whatever, but it shouldn't be like where you're making the decision based on, well, this person is a, you know, Black, disabled, you know, whatever.
It always kind of reminded me of like Pokemon in a way, because it's like, if you want to make a point on the internet, and you make that point and it's a clear point, someone else might be like, I'm going to use this marginalized status.
Right.
And then the other person might be like, well, surprise, surprise, I'm that. And I got autism.
Right.
And it just of keeps going and going and going. And
well, that's why mental health has become so popular, right? Like, our mental unhealth has become so popular, right? It's because
It's an easy marginalization to acquire. Yeah. And people are using it for clout. Like, I can say that you see it, it's happening. Like, it's not a matter of like,
yeah, no, people are putting it in their bios. People are using it in arguments. And the issue is like, well, this country is full of people who are mentally unwell. So it's like, is who can really claim that much more victim status about that? Like, yeah, you're a little bit autistic. So is everybody else. And
well, welcome to stand-up comedy.
All, exactly. Like- we're all a little autistic, or most of us are. I mean, I don't know. I like to think that things are getting better on these points, but I can't tell if it's just because I'm like selective about what podcasts I listen to and who's in my life, you know, like I can't tell if it's getting better or if I'm just, you know, curating my,
you just live in Texas.
Yeah. And I get like, yeah,
you get to live in Texas. I mean, I'm not saying like that's ideal by any means. Like there's a lot of other shit going on there, but it, I don't know. The other day I saw an ad like in the local like queer forum that was like, hey, you know, fat phobia is super pervasive in the medical field. And I have a sneaking suspicion my vet is being fat phobic to my cat by putting her on a special diet.
If that person was being sincere.
They were being dead. No, that's what I'm saying. Dead serious.
Because that sounds dead like serious. Satire.
No levels of irony. Yeah. None. No satire. It that and it's just I like that, know. Like every day. So, like,
so the fat phobia argument has extended to pets now. That's yeah. funny.
And then people were really engaging with it like it was serious.
Oh my God.
And then I think I got in trouble for saying something about like fat pussy oppression. I don't know, but like it that it is that's how it is here in Baltimore.
Wow. Yeah, it's like I almost never really know which places are going to be more kind of woke and like weird like that. Like Baltimore, you would think would be more kind of conservative. But I feel like it's in the places where you're surrounded by more conservatism that then the cities become really annoyingly woke because they're kind of pushing back against what's around them. And I think Austin has a we're somewhat woke here, but it's nice because Texas is actually more purple than people realize. I mean, yes, the rural areas are quite red, whatever, but there's still purpleness to the red. There's just, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but, cause the,
even, I like the way you say purple. That's cute.
Yeah. Like the, even the
blendy,
the blue areas are more purple than you'd think. And so are the, and so are the red areas in Texas. So I think there's more blending. And so there's, it's less obnoxious than say Portland or Seattle, where they're like, they're, you know, they take it all the way. And then
yeah,
places like Nashville or Baltimore or whatever that are like more maybe surrounded by just deep red. I don't know. These are just hypotheses. I don't know. I don't really know what Maryland is like though.
Maryland has a rich history of like crabs.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
And it's kind of swampy. But we have like, it's kind of split like Northern Maryland. The closer you get to DC, everyone is very much like you'll see the soccer moms with the signs in their yard. That's like, I believe that science is real. Women have our people's. My golden retriever is a power bottom. Yeah. Like you'll see like a lot of that. And then like the further south you get, like, I performed at a bar where the decorations were all like taxidermy geese.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of signs about like my rights don't end where your fear begins.
Yeah.
And like if you wore a mask, they would have like, I don't know, like smacked you in the face.
So would you say the woke stuff is worse in the north or in the south where there is woke stuff?
Like you, are you talking about like countrywide or just in
no, Maryland? In Maryland. So like, are there cities, if you're talking about north versus south, are there cities in the north and cities in the south so that they're like kind of a city situated in liberal world versus a city situated in conservative world?
I would say the more money there is, like places that have more money are more, you see more of that performative woke stuff. Mm-hmm. And like, as you kind of increasingly go into like more and more levels of poverty, whether it's city poverty or country poverty, you don't see it as much.
You're right. You know what? That's probably the actual breakdown for all of this. It's just how much money there is. Yeah, because sometimes it just feels like the people with money on some unconscious level feel bad that they're not really doing anything to help. They're actually just kind of part of the capitalist problem. And so they feel the need to be woke about social stuff in order to feel like good people. But really, they're the ones perpetuating the big real problems. Whereas poorer people just don't give a fuck because we'd rather just have a sense of humor and laugh our way through things and like realize that,
right,
hey, we're working our way in making progress about race and sex and homophobia, transphobia kind of stuff, but that'll all happen over time.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the way it's going to happen healthfully is if we are joking around about it and all able to kind of like progress at our own pace where everyone can like, where we can win hearts and minds on those things and not shove things down people's throats.
Yes. And I don't, that's what I want. Cause it's, you know, I'm sure you can kind of relate to this. It's like Maryland is very kind of black and white like that. And like, I perform comedy in both halves, but I definitely have to like really change my set. And I've been like had people get really, really mad at me from like kind of both halves of Maryland. I've had people, you know, really enjoy my stuff from both halves, but it's always kind of for different reasons. Like whenever I'm performing at a dive bar type thing in the backwoods, they're always like, we like you because you eat cooter, but you're not so sensitive like a cooter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, when I go up to like somewhere near DC, it's all, I don't know if they have the capacity to laugh. Like, yeah. I think I will say something like, I'm a lesbian, and then they'll be like, yeah, stunning and brave.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, and then when I actually do my set and like kind of reveal that I'm kind of like a gutter person.
Yeah.
They're kind of like, that's not the best representation. So they don't really
approve
always. Like, I actually tend to do better with kind of the backwoods people, weirdly.
Yeah. I really like regular people too. I try to, you know, I perform for all kinds of audiences, but usually people with less money, people, whatever, are more fun and just down to earth. I mean, I like it when people can get, you know, literary references and stuff, but like pound for pound, it's more fun to perform in smaller towns a lot of times because people are just more laid back and are like there for a good time and just, you know,
exactly
care more about humor than about looking around to make sure they're not laughing at the wrong stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. And like, again, like this all being said, I don't even say anything like cancel worthy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like, people are so uptight. So uptight. And there's ways to work around it, but it's just nice to go somewhere and perform where you don't really have to, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
This is Zach with the Texas Yurt Company, a proud sponsor of Politically Non-Binary. Don't know what a yurt is? Check us out online at www.texasyurts.com.
Okay. You remember where we were? Can I hear you? Hopefully.
Huh?
Oh, good. Hello? Just making sure it's still working.
We're good. Anyway, as I was saying, I just wish that the LGBT community could lovingly mock each other like we used to. And I think that would fix all of the world's problems.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so that's exactly, lovingly mock each other like we used to. So I think it seems to me like, generally, there's a kind of split where gay people are more likely to still be that way, and queer identifying people are more likely to be in the narcissistic, problematic area, where it's like, so the more you're the kind of person who would have been arguing for a safe space, the less safe you actually make your space for ideological diversity or sense of humor.
Or just people who haven't had access to the same type of vocabulary training as you. And I'm not talking about like pronouns. I'm talking about entire frameworks that you have that you can really only access through a 4-year liberal arts degree.
Right.
You know, it's so like, it is very elitist in that sense, which is so hypocritical.
Right.
I don't know. I think they really don't like the working class, but a lot of them have kind of found a new way of saying it.
Right. Yeah. I think it all does boil down to classism as per usual. And that's my big issue with a lot of the woke. It's like, it winds up being people who are quite privileged, making fun of people who are quite poor and telling them that they're wrong and that kind of stuff. Yeah. I just have no patience for, and you know, I grew up in a place where it was mostly poor people. And so I'm always going to have total empathy and sympathy for people who don't use the right words, the quote unquote right words.
But if they're showing their hearts in the right place, like if they're really showing that, you know, like this is probably the worst example I can think of, but my ex, her family's from Saltvale, Virginia. And she had just come out. I was her first girlfriend. And like her aunt was like, I don't know. We were standing in their like living room in front of all of her aunt's like Betty Boop figurines, because why not? I guess it comes with the territory. And then she like randomly starts. She's like, I don't have a problem with the gays. Watch this. And then kisses me on the mouth. And like that's like you know what I mean, like that's probably pretty problematic,
sure,
I guess, but also at the end of the day she's like showing her
being inclusive and funny.
I don't think she was even trying to be funny. She was just like, look how serious I'm taking this, give me your girlfriend.
She's polyamorous too, you know, while she's at it.
Yeah, and keeping it all in the family.
Yeah, incestuous, polyamorous. She's adding letters to the list.
Yeah, the LGBTQI for
two. We got two eyes now.
Yeah, and that's a good one. If you keep it up with the incest, you'll get three eyes. I don't know.
There you
go. Extra limbs too. Who knows?
That's funny.
Thank you. But yeah, I miss making fun of each other because, like, you know, you're a comic, like, and that's kind of like for a comedian, that's like our love language, like riffing and kind of saying, you look like this, haha, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's like
making fun of each other's mannerisms.
That's when everything feels the best to me between in diverse spaces, is when we're all making fun of each other. When we can all like rip on each other, then we all know we all love each other. We all trust each other. No one thinks anything is punching up or punching down because we're all doing it. This concept of punching up and punching down can often feel so fucked up because it's like, wait, what's punching down? Because someone's of a different race or someone's of a bit different ability. I thought that's the whole point of saying they're differently abled, so that the understanding is that it's not inherently punching down to make fun of someone who has some kind of disability, because they're just as much of a fully fledged human as I am. And they can make fun of, like, there's a comic who has Down syndrome in Austin, and he like came up to me and thought that I was this other lesbian comedian. And so then he was like, oh, I hope that doesn't offend you. And I was like, no, I mean, trust me, if there were another Down syndrome comic, I'd mix y'all two up, you know? Right. And that's the kind of thing. It's like, but I like that because, you know, that way, if he's going to make fun of me, I can make fun of him. And that way we both felt the love, and we both felt like neither one of us is just being this condescending. Other. Yeah. We're seeing each other as humans and not being condescending. It's condescending to say it would be punching down to make fun of you, so I won't do it. Like, that's condescension. That's all that is. And so, I mean, if you really think someone can't take it because someone, certain kinds of mental disabilities, like, you know whether someone is there in the fight or not. You know, this guy was showing up and giving me a hard time. You know, he was ribbing me, so it was clear that I could rib him back. And then if I didn't, it would be disrespectful. And so
there's kind of an unspoken consent to all of it also.
Right.
Yeah. Like you ease your way in, you know, but you know, it's funny you say that though, because I've been thinking a lot about this lately. At the end of the day, I would rather be seen, quote unquote, right, for exactly what I am, even if it's appraised negatively, than have some performative acceptance of me.
Right.
And I always actually, believe it or not, think back to the last Chappelle special. This is an unpopular thing, probably. But I remember there was one part of his special where he was talking about those like dykes.
Yeah.
He was talking about like he ran into a stud who was like, "Why are you looking at my girl?" And like, then he like used her titties as punching bags or something. I don't know. It was like, I'm not saying I'm like, haha, good one, Dave. But I am saying, you know, I feel like he brought to light a kind of interaction with someone who I might know in an honest way. At least it was honest to him, which I strongly prefer over how lesbians are kind of being portrayed in the media or even in queer spaces now as this hyper feminine, like, mom figure. I don't know how or when that happened, but that's really never been us. And that seems to be that the only way people can kind of accept us is to project that image onto us.
Where are you seeing these hyper feminine mom figures?
Well, think about the lesbians they let on TV, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't watch much TV, so I'm not sure what's going moms. On. Is that happening? Can you like tell me some TV shows where that's happening? Because I just don't know.
Okay. The Fosters is an example of that.
Oh yeah, there's two moms there, right?
But there's really no other like representation. I mean, like even on the L Word, the most butchy character they had was Shane, and Shane is like kind of like
an androgynous twink, yeah,
at most. But even if you look at kind of like, a lot of like younger queers are kind of doing like art meant to kind of depict different letters of the LGBT community. And it's the trend right now to kind of make the lesbians like the very frilly pink one. You know, they even made a new flag for it and everything with like pink and stuff in it.
Yeah. I always thought the lesbian flag that we have got seems off base, 'cause it's like a lot of pinks and stuff. And it's like, if anything, the lesbian flag should be more blues and greens, you know, or some kind of nice plaid.
It should be a piece of flannel with Tori Amos's face on it.
Right, exactly. More green earth tone kind of colors would make more sense, as opposed to this weird, it's like the lipstick lesbian flag is what that has become. I mean, there's some nice orange, I think it's like pink, purple, orange, but yeah, that's... It's a
Pepto-Bismol nightmare.
Right. Yeah, Pepto-Fem flag. Not what most lesbians that I know would want for their flag. So I guess that just takes us redesigning the flag. Maybe we should come up with a new one.
And throw some dog hair on it.
Yeah. You have to weave dog hair into the flag.
Mm-hmm. And a little bit of tears.
Oh yeah, always tears. Just over wrap yourself in it while you're experiencing some queer longing, and then raise it up. Okay.
I don't know, but back to the point. I do miss the idea of people seeing each other for exactly what we are, even if it's not like the preferred. I don't know. I just miss being seen.
You know, I remember drag shows at least used to be, and sometimes they still are, where the drag queens would make fun of everyone mercilessly and make all kinds of politically incorrect jokes. And it was a very like, ooh, look at what this thing that we're all doing in kind of privacy as a queer at the time gay community.
Yes.
And so if that's what drag queen story hour at these libraries or whatever it was like a kid's version of that, I think that would be kind of cool. I don't really know what's happening at those.
No, that would be so fun. Like, imagine like, little Timmy, is this a picture of your house? It looks worse than RuPaul's backyard after fracking. Okay.
Right. Like show what it's like. These kids. Show what it's like to roast everybody and roast everybody out of love and roast everybody equally, rich, poor, black, white, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like that would be kind of a cool thing if the drag queens were out there. I think everyone would like that. If the drag queens are out there being politically incorrect, but on a children's level, then that would help everyone. Cause the liberal people would be like, yay, it's drag queens. Conservative people would be like, oh, actually we love these jokes.
Right. Oh my God. You just solved everything.
We just need to brand it to the conservatives better. We need to teach
drag queens how to help children pick on each other.
Yeah. Learn how to do roasts in a way that's productive.
A light roast.
That's my favorite. Like, I remember one of my roommates in Boston was like a somewhat larger Jewish dude. And, you know, he would always call me a big old bull dyke. And then I would call him a stingy Jew. And what, you know, we would fat Jew, whatever. All the, you know, we could say whatever we wanted to each other because it was out of love and it was just fun. And it's like, those are the kinds of things where you go, that's like progress. When we can all joke around, that's how you know that you've made it. That's how you know you've met. Martin Luther King's real dream is that we can all roast each other in a circle. You know, we can, exactly. And that's what holding hands really looks like, is when we can all laugh together. There is no sense of punching up and punching down. You know, neither me nor my friend Miles would have ever thought of one of us punching down on the other in any kind of demographic breakdown, just because he's a man and I'm gay and he's Jewish, but I'm whatever, you know, like you could make, we would never have tried to do any math about who had the most points of whatever, you know, it was just, we were friends. And so we're going to rib on each other that way. And that's what I want for queer people, is to understand
too.
And there's so much to make fun of them about that. We're just all missing.
If you're like a septum ring person who's pretending to have like five different personalities who are all anime characters, wouldn't it be more fun to do that and laugh at yourself?
Right. And that's the thing. It's like some of it is,
we all just,
they get a little outlandish with just how stupid their hair looks or whatever, because no one is making fun of it. There's a little bit of a like, all right, like be yourself. But there's a reining in that some people will choose to do if they could get made fun of a little bit more. There's some people who would go harder and be even wilder because they want to get made fun of more. But I think some people are not very aware of how people see them because everyone is treating them with kid gloves. And so
I think that's a huge disservice, because it becomes like you're living in the Truman Show.
Right.
Like if everyone's coddling you, you can't trust anyone. Your meanest friend is probably the one who cares about you the most.
It's just like how a lot of times no one will tell a woman that her bangs look stupid.
But they look stupid.
But they usually look stupid. And so that's the same thing. If the whole queer community is getting these ridiculous haircuts and gauges and piercings and whatever outfits that just kind of like, you know,
out here looking like Cynthia from the Rugrats.
Yeah. And some people want to look ridiculous for all kinds of reasons, and some people like those looks, and I'm not saying that no one should have any of those looks, but there's some amount of it where if someone's wondering why they're not getting laid, for instance, it's like, well, maybe if you're not just getting laid but getting into relationships, having people date them, you know, there are certain things where it's like, well, you know, because some people can pull off any of these things that we've mentioned, but a lot of people can't really pull it off. And so it's like, if someone could just tell you, hey, dude, you know, your haircut makes you look like that chick from the Rugrats, whatever. It could give someone the option to be self-aware and go, oh, okay, this isn't really like an aesthetically pleasing
move. This is what I'm giving right now.
Or whatever. Yeah. But I mean, again, I hesitate to say any of that stuff about aesthetic, because we have our own aesthetic tastes. Other people like looking however they like looking. But the queer community does get made fun of a lot for our hair and outfits and whatever. And it's like, well, our little kind of walking constant pride parades. If we all looked funny, but we were all kind and funny, then I think it would be fine. But if
it would be like living in the cast of the Muppets. Right. They all look funny, but they're all funny and they're always bonking each other and stuff.
No, I think it's the combination of, if we're going to look kind of ridiculous by anybody else's standards, and aesthetically displeasing by anybody else's standards,
you have to have a sense of humility.
Yeah, humility. I guess, yeah, humor and humility go together. I don't know what's going on there etymologically.
Definitely.
But that's, yeah. So there are some people who, and I guess that's the other part of the narcissism definition, right? You've lost your sense of humility.
You're so smart. Can't even believe it, but that is probably correct.
Yeah. So yeah. I think that's what I've always kind of wanted the queer and liberal circles to have some awareness of. It's like, don't be so sure that you're on the right side of history just because of one or two points of data that you've pinpointed, that you're on the side of whatever you think is the new civil rights thing. Like, it right. might not be as simple as that. And you need to have some humility that you could be wrong, that there could be
things. Or that you could be grating and irritating and right. not in a, oh, you just think I'm grating and irritating because I don't, you know, represent your ideals. Like, no, like on a human level, you are pretentious.
Right.
And you yeah. look stupid.
Yeah, to be pretentious and look that stupid at the same time is really quite a lot. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but maybe.
And this is coming from someone who often does look stupid, but right. goddamn, if I don't have quite a sense of humilitas.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hope I have as much humility as I think I do too.
You probably do. If you care about it, you do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm always open to people's feedback about what I'm wrong about too. And that's the thing. It's like, just be open to someone else's perspective on why they use a word that you don't like, or, you know, why they make a joke.
If we were more open to like the idea that like being wrong isn't necessarily going to get you completely ostracized from everyone, you know, there would be more room for growth.
Right. I remember on Reddit, in the pandemic, I had gotten on Reddit finally and was really enjoying these like discussion groups that were happening. And some of them were like gender critical debates, trans rights activists and stuff. That was one of them. There were a few different ones like that, but it was really like a lot of people, some people were being assholes, but a lot of people were earnestly having debates and like discussions, and it was really cool. And then that group got deleted. A number of groups got deleted because Reddit like did some kind of ban of a bunch of stuff that was like the kind of anything that was questioning trans rights. They just deleted all these groups, and it really sucked because I was like, here were people who were genuinely trying to like come together Learn. And figure things out and have that openness. But it was decided that this Reddit needed to be a safe space, which is pretty crazy for Reddit.
I don't think that, you know, I feel like I can't really speak on that, but I feel like anytime there are two opposing ideologies making a space where they're trying to come together, I can't really imagine that that's a bad thing.
Right.
People from different walks of life trying to connect on something.
Right. Exactly. And it just felt like this one area where it was like, I thought we had a safe space for discussion and like genuine discussion. And yes, you're going to have some people being assholes on that, but we needed that in order to like move forward. And that's just like one more space that got eradicated. And yeah, I don't know.
And I would say, you know, the important thing about those spaces too, is like, I feel like a lot of the people who are very anti-trans haven't actually met a trans person.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, that's a chance for them to see like, okay, like trans people are not a monolith. They're right. individuals.
Right.
This is a way to engage openly without getting immediately yelled at. It's just a way to talk to another person who's different to you right. and maybe connect. And even just in that interaction itself, that might change some of their own perspectives exactly. and answer some of the questions that they might have had.
Exactly. And I had questions and I wanted to like talk to more people, and I was getting that. And exactly, it was a way for people to engage with differences of opinion in a way that was healthy. And losing that just felt like such a dark such a dark blow. Yeah. And so it made it feel like, okay, if we can't even have that where, you know, it's just like mildly autistic people having discussions about, you know, how sports work, then how
emphasis on mildly. No.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? It was like that, but it was like, here,
no,
I was,
I'm kidding.
Yeah. I mean, mildly to moderately autistic anyway.
Spicy.
Yeah. So then you go, if we can't even have those discussions, then what hope is there in person to have conversations where, you know, if you're in a queer space, then it's like outside of queer spaces, I feel much freer to just throw out some opinions because I know people are generally going to kind of agree with me because people are generally reasonable. But
and it's not like you're married spaces, to those ideas. No. We're just human beings are naturally curious and inquisitive and need to process together. To your point, I would actually say I think online spaces for debate is actually a terrible idea, because I think if you are going to kind of talk about an entire group of people, you need to be looking into their eyes.
Yeah.
To do it. Otherwise, what are you?
Well, that's why it was for the autistic people. We weren't going to look into each other's eyes anyway. So.
Bye.
It was good for Reddit. Was good for certain ones of us. That's why particularly the GC versus TROA, which I don't consider myself anything anyway. But those discussions.
I don't know what any of that is.
Gender critical. Gender critical.
I know what that is.
Oh, okay. TRA, trans rights activist.
Okay.
So it was, that's why I say it was for mildly autistic people to talk, because it was better than Twitter, because with Twitter that you have to have all those threads or you can't really have a, you know.
Twitter confuses me.
Yeah. So for Reddit, it was like you could actually like have long form point by point discussions. But yeah, in person is much better for most people. And that's where we should be able to have conversations and that, you know, are outside of the orthodoxy about whatever we think the rules are currently at the time. I mean, I remember I had a friend who worked for Planned Parenthood, and this was years ago. There was literally a day where they would get morning emails, and sometimes the morning emails would include new words you're not supposed to say. So I remember the day when they were like, hey guys, make sure you're not using the word crazy, because that, you know, minimizes actual crazy people or whatever. And it's like, that, yeah, you know, this is where lose me.
That goes back to that elitism stuff, because I've noticed that, okay, like, who do you think are the ones who even have internet access to get those emails? Like, I work with populations who are living way, way, way below the poverty line, right?
Yeah.
You're, how do I want to say this? Like, a lot of the women I work with, they don't, if they're desperately seeking resources in the city, right? They're very marginalized. A lot of them don't know what a cervix haver is. You know what I mean?
Right.
They don't even know what a cervix is. Like, it's.
I barely know what a cervix is, quite frankly. So I know my friend had a big dick and broke one once. So that's, I know it's up, it's up there in the pussy somewhere, but you know.
It's up there in the pussy.
I really do need to look at a little picture diagram thing of a vagina again. I feel like I forget. I'm really bad with directions.
Get up in there.
Really bad with spatial reasoning. I said I'm really bad with directions. So it's like I gotta use GPS in my hometown. I gotta use GPS for these pussies too. Like, what's next? Something you ever?
I thought you said I'm really bad with erections, and I was like, yeah, that tracks.
No, I'm great with erections. You know how sometimes you're like fucking someone, and sometimes, and like, especially once they're really warmed up and things are going, where you get into, you're like, am I in a new part of the vagina now? It's like a different room in here. You know what I mean? You're like, how?
Yeah.
It just keeps going. I'm like, am I on the third story?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
there was one time this girl made me fist her. And then I was like doing it, but I have tiny hands because I'm a petite individual. And
that's
then,
why she wanted you to fist her. That's that's what tiny hands are
but
for.
Then I put in both and was doing my like rave hands, and she's like, your puny fists do nothing for me. And
oh,
it really
German?
Hurt my feelings.
Oh man. Oh, that's funny. You got both fists in there? She got a fucking horse pussy. Jesus Christ. I thought I liked a big pussy, but two hands not being enough. Yeah, that'll emasculate anybody. She needs to.
Yeah.
I guess she can get one of those novelty dildos for her needs.
Something like that. But if you're talking about like pussy spatial awareness, like she had quite a lot of real estate and I just wasn't equipped to inhabit it, I suppose.
Yeah, damn. Well, I'm sorry that
I'm glad we processed that.
Yeah. Sorry you were made to feel small. For a lot of people, your hands would be perfect because you could get fisted and feel very full that way without it being too much. So, you know.
Maybe someday.
If you're not too scarred from that one. I'll tell you, it makes a big difference. No, I'll tell you a big difference. It makes a big difference when you're how into the person you are. You know, if you're like not that into someone, fisting them is kind of a lot. But if you're really into them, then it's so hot. So.
Oh, I don't know. I've never wanted to like internally like punch someone. I just did it because the girl wanted me to.
Yeah. Again, that's how I felt. That's how I felt about the different people I fisted. It's like. The first one, it was like, they just wanted me to. And I was like, okay. What, how does this work? Is this good for you? Okay. But then with the next woman, it was like, she was super into it. And I was super into it. And it was like, it worked so well, you know, it felt so good for everyone, you know, and it was like just the hottest fucking thing. So it's just,
in my case, it was like, I put one arm in and I was kind of like,
Also,
you just get sucked in.
No, fisting
is
fun.
Fight your way out.
It's supposed to be a tight fit. It's supposed to take work. I mean, when I really was enjoying it, it was like you work your way up still from, you know, one or two fingers all the way to three to four to like a little bit. And then once you get in there, it's like this big, it should be this momentous thing where you're like, you know, oh my God, I'm in there. And now I get to do some whatever.
That's what you say right before you come. Oh my God, I'm in there. And then you come from your fist.
Yeah.
Or however lesbian sex works. I don't know.
However it works. I still don't know. Good. Well, I think a lot of people are in agreement. I don't know if the queer community, the gay community, whatever knows what to do. I mean, there's a part of me that thinks we should just have more of a separation where it's okay to sometimes just be like, this is a gay event, not a queer event. Like, it's okay to market things and brand things as like, this is a gay space. It's a gay bar. Not everything has to be queer. Because it's either that or like, if the queers could stop being less annoying, then we can all be in it together. But if not, then
be annoying the way we're annoying.
You're true. Yeah, we're all going to be annoying. Like, don't worry.
We're like beer pong annoying. You know what I mean?
That's nice. Yeah, gays are like beer pong annoying.
We're just like very that. And like, I feel like they're like pressed flower journal annoying.
Yeah.
Is that registering? Like,
I was trying to think of like an annoying kind of like weird, maybe like RPG kind of game that they would be playing, you know, instead of beer pong. I don't know.
I feel like they would be like, you know, trying to work in like passive aggressive comments into like some kind of like ass eating workshop kind of annoying. Yeah. Like, I don't know. But it's that
this
kind of
annoying. Workshop is really ableist. Can I just say?
Not as everyone someone can get who on there. Suffers from bulimia, I cannot partake of this ass-eating workshop because I will puke afterwards.
I would think they'd be better at it. Maybe someone with asthma is
with asthma.
Asthma. There you go.
What does it mean?
Oh God, yeah, this ass eating workshop is able. That's a good sketch though. Maybe we should, instead of making this, but maybe we should be making sketches, just making fun of these things. And we could make a sketch about someone who's complaining that the ass eating workshop is ableist.
I actually, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Actually.
Actually. All right. Well, I think we solved it.
We just need to make more sketches.
We need to make more sketches. I think that's what it really is. That's how to make the queer community be and seem more fun is just more sketch comedy, showing people, hey, we do have a sense of humor. We're not a monolith. Yes, there are some annoying people. There are some annoying people in every demographic. And so don't make a stereotype out of those annoying people. If you don't want us to make a stereotype out of the certain, you know, certain Black people or certain Muslims or like certain disabled people, certain Southerners or whatever, or certain women or certain men, if you don't want us to make stereotypes out of the worst of that, then don't make stereotypes, you know, don't make a generalization out of the worst of the queers. And then on the other hand, we need to be the queers that we want to see in the world, which means making more sketch videos.
Yes. That's why we have pretty much the most important jobs in the world. And true. We're pretty much Mother Teresa.
Except Mother Teresa was a bitch, right? So we're better than Mother. I'm going to go ahead and say we're better than Mother Teresa because she was a homophobe, I believe.
Oh, well.
Have you not heard that?
No.
Oh, that's like what she's like second most famous for.
When I had my fists in her, never mind. but yeah, she was probably a homophobe too.
I mean, you know, who wouldn't be? Wasn't she born in 1892 or something? Come on. People give Mother Teresa such a hard time and it's like, who cares?
She did other stuff.
She did. Yeah. Her points are on in the black. Anyway, do you want to promote anything before we get out of here? Instagram or.
Yeah, I'm Rose Vineshank Comedy on Instagram. I make memes and they're all unhinged and I say a lot of dumb stuff, but sometimes it's funny.
Love it. All right. Thanks. Thanks, Rose. And end the recording.
Thanks.
Hey, thanks for listening to the end of the episode. That's so cool. If you like this podcast, if you're into what I'm doing, then you can follow me on Instagram at politicallynb, the letters NB. You can also go to patreon.com/politicallynb or politicallynb.substack.com if you want to support financially. You can always just Google. You can always just Venmo me too at Gay Ariel, GayArielle. I, you know, I'm a comedian and podcaster, like a starving artist type. So if you want to support my comedy, my earnest attempts to make a good podcast and figure out how to bring different voices to the table. Like, you know, Joe Rogan's podcast started off shitty too. I'm not saying, you know what I mean? But I'm just saying it's like, you got to start somewhere. And I have a laptop and a microphone and a little bit of help. And I still barely know what I'm doing and my life is a disaster and a mess. And so it's been hard to get around to doing everything I want to, all the guests that I want to have on the podcast and meeting with people in person and all those kinds of things. So, you know, the more you support me, the easier it is for me to do that. And I appreciate support in any ways, including telling people about the podcast, sharing it on social media, following, liking, subscribing, rating, reviewing, all the good stuff. Yeah, so if you think that there are no obnoxious queers in the world and that's all overblown, it's just something that people who are mean-hearted say in order to make ourselves feel better about saying the word faggot, whatnot, then, you know, hit me up. You can hit me up on Twitter, too. I'm at DemiBinarial. It was a Demi Lovato joke. DemiBinarielle. That's how you spell my name, Arielle. You can also follow me on Instagram at Ellen DeGenderless. It's fun if you want to message me about the podcast. It's fun if you message the Politically NB account so I can keep things organized. By fun, I mean organized. But yeah, if you have thoughts about this episode, things you agree with or disagree with, if you want to do a response episode, then hit me up for any of those reasons. And yeah, have a good weekend. I don't know when this is going to come out, but you know, have a good weekend regardless.
Big thanks to our producer, Raymond Cabrera, our art guy, Caleb Sexton, and our sponsor, Texas Yurt Co. at texasyurts.com.